Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
If you've ever experienced chronic joint pain or an impact injury or just woken up with a crooked neck, then today's expert feature could help you out. With an aging population and an increase in the early onset of musculoskeletal problems, we wanted to devote half an hour in our Monday expert segment to orthopaedic health. So today I'm joined by surgeon and president of the New Zealand Orthopaedic Association, Dr. Simon Hadlow. If you've got any questions for Simon, you can text them through to me on 2101. Hello there, Simon.
Good afternoon, Jesse. How are you?
Yeah, good. Nice to talk to you. What does orthopaedics cover?
Broadly, orthopaedics covers musculoskeletal disability and falls into main groups being acute conditions or traumatic conditions and degenerative conditions.
Musculoskeletal seems to cover quite a bit. So anything that's your muscles and anything that's your bones, is that the idea?
That's the idea. So predominantly joints, hip and knee for degenerative conditions, shoulders, spine as well, neck and lower back. In the trauma or acute situation, it's more likely to be fractures of any bone apart from the skull.
Can you just help us out with the difference between acute and chronic?
So acute is when you have an injury, you've been in a car accident, or you might have had a sporting injury or lifted something awkwardly, and you have an acute onset of pain, and you may have suffered an injury as well in terms of a ligament sprain right through to a broken bone. So that's what we will call an acute injury. A lot of that will be presented through our public hospital system via ED and need a fairly emergent treatment within a few days. Other times it will be managed more carefully or on a less urgent basis, maybe through referral to a physiotherapist.
And then the other one, chronic?
Chronic is more associated with degenerative conditions, Jesse, whereby over often a lifetime of use or wear and tear, your joints wear out, anything from the little knuckles on your fingers through to the major joints in your hips and knees, shoulders. And that's where arthritis sets in and where orthopaedics can often be of benefit.
Everyone gets a bit sore in places as they get older. At what point should someone seek medical treatment?
Yes, that's a very good question. And it depends what you mean by medical treatment, I guess, Jesse. Mm. So I think that, we all have aches and pains as we get older. And it's, I think, something which doesn't get better and or gets worse and starts impacting on your ability to function from day to day. And so that's a pretty broad sort of answer, but there are also different layers of intervention. It can start with a simple self-medication over the counter, ibuprofen or Panadol, through to seeking help with other health professional like a physio or an osteopath, right through to getting a referral to see a specialist if there's something more pressing or serious.
What's the difference between you and a physiotherapist?
So a physiotherapist is someone who's also dedicated to musculoskeletal health, and they provide expert advice on and therapeutic treatment of soft tissue injuries around joints, spines. An orthopaedic surgeon, on the other hand, is primarily set up to clarify a diagnosis if that's not been made, and then to offer usually, if appropriate, surgical treatment of that complaint.
What can I do at 48 to stop myself needing a new hip or a new knee at 78?
Again, that's a good question. Osteoarthritis, as we commonly see, is a condition which we don't actually fully understand the etiology. We don't fully understand what causes it. There's clearly some genetic and familial components. There's a minority of them where the patient may have suffered quite a devastating injury to the joint in their younger years, and that's often like a fracture dislocation that just needed treatment, and then the joint will, that's been a major insult, and the joint will wear out prematurely. So you at 48, apart from not maybe undertaking up marathon running on concrete roads, there's probably not much you can do that we're aware of at this stage to prevent what may be an arthritic complaint coming on.
Should we just expect to have hip and knee replacements as part of living a bit longer?
That's, I think, a reasonable thing to expect. Not everyone who lives to be an old age does get hip and knee arthritis. It's, as I said, not well understood why some people will get it and others don't. But certainly, the longer we live, the more heart procedures we have to keep us living and so on, then the more likely you are to need an orthopedic intervention.
Jane's listening on a similar topic. She says, as someone who has osteoarthritis in both hips and knees, I'm keen to know what your specialist opinion is about the use of stem cells, particularly in relation to knees. I'd also be interested in his views as to exercise and physio and diet and supplements to delay joint replacement or even perhaps prevent surgery. We've covered that a bit, but anything you'd like to add?
Yeah, stem cells is quite a fashionable topical intervention. To date, there's been no good solid science to suggest that stem cell treatment can delay or avert the need for a joint replacement in osteoarthritis. The cartilage of our joints, of the hips and knees and shoulders, has a very limited ability to repair itself, and it's a very complex three-dimensional structure which lends itself poorly to healing. Stem cells maybe in the future, but there's not enough evidence. I don't think there's enough ability to direct the stem cells to do what we want them to do in terms of reassembling what is a very complex three-dimensional structure which is anchored to the bone of the joint.
Can you explain osteoarthritis?
Yes, osteoarthritis is a degenerative condition which starts with loss of that three-dimensional articular cartilage structure, which leads to breakdown and patches of the articular cartilage. In other words, it doesn't repair itself, and then that exposes the underlying bone, which can then the and this is associated with inflammatory process in the joint, and this then can affect the bone, cause cysts under the bone, and inflammation and proliferation of the actual synovial lining of the joint, which causes swelling and stiffness and the pain as the cartilage slowly breaks down and wears out. You get exposed bone rubbing on exposed bone, which is not what it's designed to do.
What can you do about it?
Yes, the sort of gradation of management with this condition. And so in early phases, then I think exercises, stretching, and exercising the muscles around the joint, particularly around the knee and the hip, to keep the range of motion, preserve the range of motion as much as possible. Judicious use of things like anti-inflammatories, Nurofen or prescription anti-inflammatories can help reduce that synovial inflammation, reduce the amount of swelling, and that those two things add to stiffness, so you can reduce the stiffness, and they also help with pain that can be generated from the rough surfaces. And so that's a mainstay of what we call non-operative management. And then when that fails, when the pain becomes too great, there's night pain keeping you awake, or you can't walk what you around the supermarket, then you will look at having a surgical treatment, which by far the commonest procedure is a joint replacement.
If it's the cartilage or the missing cartilage that is the problem, why does a replacement joint help? Is it just to stop that bone on bone abrasion as you're talking about?
Correct. So the new articular surface, or for a start, the old disease articular surface gets completely excised and replaced with a usually a lining with, there'll be a very a hard polished metal or a ceramic which is very smooth, and that will almost always articulate with a very hard high density plastic material which has very good wear characteristics. So it completely removes those pain generators from the joint and gives you a new surface.
People generally feel pretty happy afterwards. Is it life-changing?
I think for a lot of people, if you ask them, that will be the case, yes. That gives them a new lease of life. And be fair to say that 80 to 90% of patients would feel that way.
Liz in Wellington heard you mentioning marathon running on concrete. Can you please explain more? And would running on other surfaces be okay? And why? What have you got to say about running?
Well, running per se is a good exercise. It's a, I think it's a matter of impact, high impact, and repetitive impact. Well, as I say, we don't really understand what causes arthritis, but if you have a predisposition to developing osteoarthritis, then and the first stage of arthritis is that three-dimensional cartilage, it softens. So if you then expose that articular cartilage to a repetitive high impact loading, then theoretically there could be a chance that will accelerate the tendency to wear and tear and progression towards osteoarthritis. So the presumption being that if you do have a knee which is a bit sore, then maybe it's getting a bit of that cartilage softening as the early stages of arthritis, that if you do go for a run, that you run on grass or softer surfaces rather than than on a concrete walkway, or a foresh that you have on the foreshore, for example, in New Plymouth.
Clara wants to know why do the old war wounds kick up a fuss when the weather turns for the worse and when it's cold?
That's a good question. That's thought to be to do with the change of barometric pressure. And again, poorly understood, but it's a very real phenomenon. But that's really all I have to say there.
You might not have much to say about this either, but someone texted and says, I've just been diagnosed with severe osteoarthritis in both knees and the right hip. I'm 62 and I have no health insurance. What things do I need to consider regarding knee and hip replacement? What can someone expect that doesn't have private funding for procedures like this?
We still have obviously a universal healthcare system with the public hospital. So the stages for management would be to see your a general practitioner, your general practitioner. Now, there've been that from there, one or two things will happen. The general practitioner will assess the patient or assess you and then order x-rays and get a feeling of the severity, not only on the x-ray, but also the impact on the patient's life and well-being. And that gives them the option of one of two options. One is to refer either to the community or in the hospital to a musculoskeletal physiotherapist who can then facilitate sort of non-operative care, such as ensuring appropriate analgesia with the help of the doctor and appropriate exercise, stretching, and strengthening of the joints. The second pathway, which the general practitioner may choose if the condition's more severe, is to refer to the public hospital for a specialist assessment. And again, that will be assessed, triaged, and an appointment made to see the orthopedic specialist regarding the hip and the knee. Again, that then the processes that's assessed, and then most places that the patient are given a score and then are placed onto the waiting list for the hip or knee replacement.
How long will that take?
That's a very good question too. So, as you know, there have been well-publicized targets of having to wait less than 4 months. If you go to the website for the Ministry of Health, it says you'll wait less than 4 months for an appointment and then less than 4 months for surgery. Now, that with COVID and there's been a backlog, that's in most places unlikely to be met. It's more likely to be several, many months at the moment, sometimes up to 12 months for an assessment. And surgery, there's been a big drive as of the 30th of June that people won't have been waiting for more than 365 days for the surgery, but then again, that's 12 months. So that's about where things are at on a national level.
A few people asking about supplements. Do any of those support cartilage health? Asks Jane, and someone asking particularly about magnesium. And by the way, if you've just tuned in, we're talking orthopaedics in our Monday expert segment with Dr. Simon Hadlow, who's president of the New Zealand Orthopaedic Association. Would you take something, Simon, to support cartilage health?
Again, there is a lot of products out there which claim to support cartilage health, but again, it's a very hard to qualify just how that helps. And I think it's reasonable to approach these things with a degree of skepticism, to be honest. I'm not saying they don't work, and there is always there are some which may have make you feel better, but in terms of actually on a molecular level, actually making that cartilage, stopping it degenerating or actually repairing it, there's not so much evidence for that.
GC, thanks for the interesting interview, writes one person. Oh gosh, they're all coming in. I suspect our rates of excess body weight and obesity are problematic if one is at risk of osteoarthritis. Wouldn't weight loss be an important preventative strategy? Asks one person.
That's a very good point. So, one thing we are seeing, and this is very much a generalization, with increasing body mass index, is what we call it, as a polite way of saying it, and particularly in the younger generations, that there's been, and it's definitely an increase, particularly in early onset knee arthritis, which again is related to someone who's got a predisposition perhaps to forming osteoarthritis, and then a mechanical load, 120 kilos, 130 kilos, and some anatomical variants, which means they're a bit knock-kneed or a bit bow-legged, which is not ideal. They are risk factors for developing early arthritis. Then that potentiates that. And so instead of presenting with knee arthritis in their 50s or 60s, they're presenting with it in their 30s and 40s. So, yes, and we're talking about significant obesity, what we call morbid obesity, BMIs of over 40.
What do you think about regular use of painkillers? Asks somebody on text. Are you concerned about it becoming a habit?
Yeah, I think that's, we know from overseas, particularly in the United States, where there's been an opioid crisis due to the widespread prescription of opioid type medication. In New Zealand, it's a much different market and much different situation. Yes, people are in pain, but the vast majority will be managed with non-opioid analgesia. And that includes your paracetamol, your anti-inflammatories, ibuprofens in varying strengths, through to COX-2 inhibitors, the Celebrex, which are less tough on your stomach and kidneys. And then the what we call or gabapentins and pregabalins, which are sort of are like nerve modulators. only as a very last resort do patients get put on long-term codeine, which is not a true narcotic, or tramadol. So in some ways, you know, it's an interesting comment, because if you have a high blood pressure, or you have diabetes, then those are incurable conditions, and you're expected to take medication every day. High cholesterol, another incurable condition. So in some cases, when you're treating pain complaints, often there is a degree that they're not curable. And so I think a judicious use of non-narcotic analgesia on a regular basis is important way of managing that. I'm just talking generally here, not talking about joint arthritis in particular.
Yeah. Few people want to know what the expected lifespan is of a replacement joint.
So the technology of joint replacement has certainly been improving in terms of the longevity of them, and it's fair to say that at least 90 to 95% will last 10 years, and probably 85 to 90% will last 20 years now. Knee replacements tend to last a little bit better than hip replacements, just because of the innate stability of the knee joint. But they're very good. The thing that's revolutionized hip and knee replacement is the use of what we call highly cross-linked polyethylene, which is the same polyethylene we've always used since the 1960s, but someone came up with the idea of irradiating it and getting it all to bind together even more strongly than it was before. And this has shown wear rates of 1/10 the rate of the ordinary polyethylene. So that's been a real game changer in terms of joint replacement longevity.
Someone asks simply on text, are chiropractors quacks?
I don't think so. So we got back to our original premise that if you have a problem with your joints, musculoskeletal problem, then you have the first place to go. The last thing you do is surgery, particularly on your back. The first place you go, if you can't manage it yourself, is to get some professional help.
So that might be a physiotherapist, might be a chiropractor.
Osteopath.
Yeah.
Yep.
Osteopath. You're happy with all those?
Yes, look, I think that those, they all have a place. You know, people who put their back out, their acute spasm, there's little doubt that someone who has the ability to, if you inverted commas, put your back in, close inverted commas for you, can certainly short circuit that a lot of pain and spasm in the back. I guess that it's probably more questionable when you have had problems for years and years, and then I think it's much less likely that anyone in particular can sort of cure that sort of problem.
What about cracking your back and cracking various aspects of your body? What's going on there? Is that something that you do, or is that a chiropractor?
Yeah,
thing?
No, that's not something I do personally, but I think there are two explanations. One is that certainly when you crack your knuckles, that's just a simple vacuum effect. So there's no air as such in your joints, but you can create a vacuum by distracting the joint, and that can give you that feeling of a pop. In your spine, there are, down each side of the spinal column, there are a series of little, what we call facet joints, running from the base of your skull down to the tailbone. So there must be probably over 30 of those little joints, and so they move with that spinal movement, and so they're fair game to move, and you can often get a crack from those. And when some people feel clicking in their back when they move as well. It's all those little facet joints moving to give you mobility.
What about acupuncture?
Acupuncture's used for pain relief, and again, it's works. As I understand it, I don't know too much about acupuncture on trigger points, which are I guess the concept is that if you have a deep nerve, often it will have little branches which go up to the skin, and supply the skin over the area which is hurting or generating the pain. And if you can stimulate that nerve, it can mask the pain. It's a little bit like the old days. You don't see it so much now. Someone gets hurt on the rugby field, they rub water or rub yourself where they're sore, because when you stimulate the skin, those fibers tend to drown out the nerve fibers conducting the painful stimulus. So it's a sort of extension of that.
Here's an interesting one. Someone's got arthritis in their hands and want to know if you can replace thumbs. I guess
There
they
is,
mean
it is
the
possible.
knuckle joints within the thumb, perhaps.
Yes, yeah, definitely. Yes, particularly it's probably commonest done in diseases like rheumatoid arthritis, which can really targets the big knuckles of the base of your fingers. That's usually a very successful procedure. Thumb is less likely, it's more likely to be to have the joint stiffened in the thumb and just keep it still as a post, rather than trying to preserve movement in that big knuckle at the base of your thumb.
I've got lots more questions coming through. Are there any aspects of orthopedics that you particularly wanted to cover today that we haven't got to yet?
I think it's all been we've covered a fair bit of ground, I think,
Yeah, good,
GC.
good. Okay. So, just any myths or misconceptions that you'd like to address?
I think, I mean, there's always the issue of Dr. Google, but there's also a lot of good information on available on the internet. And usually you can look at, and if you see it's from, Harvard Medical School or somewhere, somewhere a reputable institution, then that's generally pretty good information. National Institute of Health, NIH from the States, if you Google anything, that will often come up the first line of inquiry that you can follow, and that's pretty good information.
Any, yeah, go on.
Sorry. The issue we do have, we see a little bit, which can be as a patient's quite rightfully can access their reports on their scan. So we do complex MRI and CT scans, which are then reported. And, a picture is a thousand, can be described in a thousand words. So they get the very long reports and they're not inaccurate, but often there will be just one or two things which are of relevance to that patient and to that presentation, which it really requires the treating surgeon to interpret for the patient and often to allay misguided fears about what they read in the report.
30 seconds left. Anything you're excited about in the future in your field?
Oh, yes, so there's plenty of exciting trends. I think you're going to see more digital type technology coming through, more use of computers and robotic assisted arms, and not robots themselves, but robotic type tools, which I think have the ability to just increase accuracy and precision in delivering surgery.
You're not going to have any shortage of patients.
I don't believe so, Jesse.
Nice to talk to you. Really appreciate your time today.
Yep, thank you very much.
Dr. Simon Hadlow, he's been our Monday expert on orthopedics.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.